Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 109. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And today we are going to be talking about Chalice of the Gods, chapters 15 through 17. Some pretty exciting stuff happens in these chapters.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I hope everybody who celebrates Thanksgiving had a good holiday weekend.
All the Americans.
Yeah.
Because I think we're the only ones. Thanksgiving. I had to think about it. I was like, Canada. Canada does, too, but theirs is in October.
Yeah.
So, like, theirs is already done.
Theirs is different. Had some good food. Had some good times.
Oh, yeah. We had a Nerf fight.
A Nerf fight?
Garrett started it.
Oh, that
My brother-in-law,
sense.
For those who do not know. Yeah. No, actually, well, Katie saw my sister and my future sister-in-law saw the Nerf guns and was asking Garrett questions about them or something, and then she goes, hand me one. And so he gave her one, and she hid around the corner for her fiancé to sneak out, and then she, like, shot him, and it was really funny. And then, of course, that turned into how many guns can we find? So then everyone in the family, like, not everyone, but, like, four, five, six of us all found guns, and we were, like, diving behind pillows and shooting each other and... Yeah. One of them is, like, it feels like a bazooka, and the arrows were, like, really thick.
Yeah.
As opposed to, like, the normal ones.
Yeah.
And, man, that thing hurt. But, yeah, it was ridiculous. These are the sorts of things we get up to.
Yeah.
We don't plan anything for after dinner. We just sit around and chaos erupts.
Yeah.
So.
Especially with Garrett involved.
Right. So this is, that's the brand of chaos we went up with for Thanksgiving this
year. That's good.
But it was entertaining.
I watched the Lions lose in a room full of Packers fans, so...
That game.
That was that. And then had a really good discussion about how amazing Iceland is, so now I kind of want to go there.
You know...
I might be planning a trip.
I didn't properly appreciate... I mean, I love volcanoes. Like, I think they're fascinating.
Yeah.
I didn't properly appreciate them until I read a book, like a romance novel, with the girl is a volcanologist,
mm-hmm.
and it's one of Kate Canterbury's.
Really?
Yeah, it's one of the Walsh siblings.
Okay.
She's a Vulcan, like, she's the one in the family who goes out and does something else, and so she's constantly traveling and talking about nerdy things, like, geology, and it's so, I didn't really appreciate it until I had, like, gotten into that character's head,
yeah.
and I'm like, okay. I honestly think this is fascinating. So, yes, I've been following all of the Iceland Volcano Watch stuff watching all of the earthquakes in the town of Grinjevik. And, like, I've been keeping an eye on all of that because...
That's awesome.
It's just, it's fascinating how the earth changes.
Yeah.
And, like, stuff like that. How it affects people. And I'm glad they were able to get everybody evacuated from Grinjevik way before anything, you know, has even started to happen. And, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've always loved geology. I took a geology course in high school that was like a college level course, and it was so much fun, and I still am just obsessed with like rocks and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that might be a future trip for me because the person that I was talking to really, really sold it. She was like, do you want to go? I'll go back. And I was like, okay, yeah, be my tour guide.
I mean, from just the, you know, things I've seen recently, like, it's such a beautiful country. Like,
mm-hmm.
if you stay at a fair distance from the volcanoes, especially, like, it's a very beautiful country with a lot of different topography and, like, just, it's gorgeous. So, yeah, I 100% would love someday to, like, go to Iceland.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll steer clear of the erupting volcanoes. I'll just, you know. Well, after watching, there was a documentary on, I think it was on Netflix. I could be wrong. It might have been somewhere else. About a volcano on White Island where these people were, like, they regularly took boatfuls of people to this volcano. And it was kind of, like, sunken in. Like, the mouth of the volcano was on, like, ground level.
Okay.
And then the sides of it came up and formed, like, mountains on this little island. And these people were taking boats to the island and, like, were almost, like, at the rim of the volcano, like, looking in it. And it was really cool until the day it erupted while people were on the island. And, like, a lot of them died, and there were a handful that didn't, and they talked, like, they did a whole thing about that one fateful day, and I'm like, okay, I like volcanoes, I like looking at them from afar, I'm never going to, like, stand on the rim of one, because you never know when those things, like, they get signals that things are going to erupt, but sometimes you don't get a signal, sometimes it just happens, so, like, I don't mind going to places where there are volcanoes as long as I stay far enough away that I have a chance to evacuate.
That's terrifying.
But yeah, it was like just one of those things. Like, they had been taking boats out to this volcano for a long time, and it out of nowhere just decided this day at this moment to erupt, and it was like nuts. Well, so
that's a new nightmare to add to my list. Thanks for that.
See, but the thing is, all you have to do is stay clear of volcanoes.
Yeah,
and you'll be fine. True. And you don't see a whole lot of them in the Midwest.
Yes,
at least not yet.
If you would like to contact us to tell us about what you did this Thanksgiving, or this weekend, if you are not a Thanksgiving type of person, or your experience with volcanoes, and or romance novels.
We have very wide interests.
We do. You can reach out to us at Prophecy Podcast on Twitter, at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Tumblr, Instagram, Threads, and Facebook, and prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. We do not have a whole lot of news and updates this week. I think it's probably because the holiday was, like, definitely part of it.
And the show is so close, and we've got the trailer. Like, unless they do interviews, there's not a whole lot.
Yeah, and there are a couple. There was a Rolling Stones interview that I didn't post anything, and you can check out Updates Percy if you want to see more of that, but it was behind, like, a paywall, and I was like, I'm not reading this.
Nope, I don't do paywalls either.
Yeah, so, but we can tell you that PJO Pod went to New York Comic Con, and I'll put a link to their interviews that they did while they were there, because they got to talk to a lot of the creators and stuff like that, and some really awesome information came out of there, so super congrats to them. We've done a lot of interview-type stuff at New York Comic Con and San Diego Comic Con, and it is nerve-wracking but really rewarding when you can talk to people about something you love so much.
Yeah, it's chaotic, it's insane, it's stressful, but so much fun, and yeah, I'm glad they had that opportunity, because it's just such a good time.
Yeah, for sure. And then the tie-in edition of Percy Jackson and the Lightning Thief is out now, which I had totally forgotten about until I think it was like the day before it came out. Yeah, because I still ended up pre-ordering it. The pictures, because there's 8 photos from the show in the middle of this book now, and they were kind of all over the internet, and I was like, where are these pictures coming from? And I was like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot that this tie-in edition was coming out. So I did end up grabbing one, and it's pretty nice. I still wish they had gone with a different cover, if I'm being perfectly honest, but we know that they had to go with this because they didn't have the rights to, like, the trio. Like, they couldn't get that together in time to give us a different cover, but you can still see them on the back, and the pictures on the inside are really quite fantastic. So the first one is, Percy and his best friend, Grover Underwood, await a decision about Percy's future at Yancey Academy. He got in trouble.
Not gonna lie, I kinda want one of those pictures.
I know, I've seen a lot of people saying that. I bet they would sell something like that.
I mean, maybe not right away, but eventually, yeah.
Next one is, Percy gets some final advice from his teacher, Mr. Brunner. He's got a bag with him, and they're just chilling by a park bench.
Mr. Brunner's in the wheelchair.
Yep.
So this is pre-Camp Athblood. As we know.
I'm wondering if this is him, like, getting kicked out.
Right? It might be.
Yeah.
I'm trying to decide if behind him looks more like the museum, or if it's supposed to be Yancey.
Yeah, I'm gonna venture a guess and say Yancey. I see, like, a crest on the door.
Oh, and there's a suitcase. Like, there's kind of a bag next to him on the bench, but there's also a suitcase, so yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah.
How did I miss the suitcase? I saw the bag next to him on the bench.
I didn't even see that.
Not the suitcase. Yeah, he's definitely getting kicked out.
Next picture, Percy meets camp counselor Luke Castellan. Luke's looking all nice and friendly there.
And scary.
Yep.
You can get a good look at his scar.
I really want to know who's behind Percy. Like, who's on the other side of him standing there?
Yeah, that's a good question.
And there's somebody.
It's gotta be somebody from Hermes, because he's in the Hermes cabinet.
Oh, okay.
Like, those bunks look like Hermes bunks. Yeah,
that's fair.
So I'm guessing.
Yeah. Percy meets fellow camper Annabeth Chase. This is in the bathroom.
I think we've seen, like, a bigger version of this photo or something, because I swear in one of them you can see the water on the floor.
Oh, okay.
So I think it's, like, just...
It looks a little shiny, but...
Yeah. Like, I swear one of them you could actually see it, that it was watery. So, yeah, this is definitely after all of the chaos of that.
Yeah. Percy tries out his weapon forging skills under Luke's supervision. This might be my favorite picture.
I'm honestly looking forward to watching Percy try all the different things.
Like, I think it'll be cool, because it'll give us, like, a good scope of what the camp looks like and everything.
Yeah, and all the different, like, offerings for all the different demigod children. Like, yeah.
So, like, Beckendorf isn't going to be in season one. I think he would have been cast if he was.
I do think you're right. I wouldn't be surprised if there's someone that kind of resembles the possibility of Beckendorf, but he won't be named, he won't have lines.
Yeah.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if they said, we want a kid who resembles him so that if people look back, they can say, I'll bet you that's supposed to be Beckendorf, but yeah. Since he's not really named in the first book, I'm sure we'll have to wait till season two to really see that.
Yeah. I saw a lot of people being like, this is what a lot of fan drawings of Leo looks like, with his curly blonde hair.
You are absolutely not wrong. It's kind of, he's kind of what I pictured Leo to look like.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we know Leo's ethnicity is a little less white.
Yeah.
But other than that, like, the big, wet, you know, blonde, messy hair and the goggles and, yeah, it's very much what I pictured Leo to look like.
Next up, Percy meets Clarice, demigod daughter of Ares, god of war. She looks very intense there.
She looks so fierce.
Love, like, the spear.
That face wants to kill Percy.
Yes.
And I believe it.
Yeah, so
like, I wasn't necessarily sure, you know, I trust that Dior's going to do a fantastic job, but I wasn't, like, sold. That face sold me. Like, she looks fierce as hell.
Yeah. Grover, now in his true form as a satyr, Annabeth and Percy set off on their quest.
His horns are so small.
I know. I love his little ears, too.
Yeah, they're cute.
And see, Percy's carrying that box. It's gotta be the shoes.
It's gotta be the shoes.
Yeah. I'm just surprised that it's not in somebody's backpack.
Well,
is he just gonna carry that box the whole time?
Well, I'm guessing they haven't left camp yet. Like, maybe they're going to get their backpacks. Because I don't see any of them with a backpack on.
Yeah, that's true.
So I think it's, like, on their way out of camp still.
Yeah. And then lastly, the owner of Auntie M's Garden Gnome Emporium, a.k.a. Medusa, looking stunning.
I mean, it's definitely, like, old-world-esque. Like, clothing, but it has a little bit of that Hollywood glam feel to it, too.
I love that the color that they put her in basically matches the statuary. Like,
it looks like stone,
I agree. Really cool. Mm-hmm. I love it. So that was really cool. I like getting those extra pictures from that, and it showed us a lot of things we hadn't seen before, and some really good looks at Luke, which I appreciated, so...
And Karen was nice enough to link to the photos, so if you don't have the extra money to spend on another copy of Lightning Thief, which I get, you can still see the photos if you haven't had a chance.
Yes, for sure, for sure. So let us know if you guys have any favorites from those. Mine is probably the one with Percy in the Forge. I really like that one.
I mean, I like that that's something we're gonna see.
Yeah.
Because we didn't really have time to see that in the book. Like, it was like, let's get to the main event kind of thing. But I like that we're gonna maybe get a chance to see Percy trying to figure out who his godly parent is.
Yeah.
Before he knows. Like, that's gonna be a fun little added thing.
And because we see Hephaestus a little bit more in the season versus in the book, like, having him go to the forges and stuff, I think that'll kind of bring up some sort of connection. So,
yeah,
that's cool. Okay, this week our main discussion is Chalice of the Gods, chapters 15 through 17, and we are starting with chapter 15 entitled Yonkers! Exclamation point.
This was one of my favorite chapter titles, I will say. Yeah. I just think it's funny.
In this chapter, Percy goes to his guidance counselor for some much-needed guidance, and she flushes him all the way out to Yonkers.
Thanks so much.
Yeah. I was really debating which chapters to do, because I loved the end of the last chapter where he's like, oh man, I hope that she doesn't flush me again. And the beginning of this chapter where he just says, reader, she flushed me. Because it was such a great transition. And I decided to hold off and separate them. But I just really loved the start of this chapter.
It still hits.
Yeah, it does. So Percy goes to Eudora to give her an update on the quest from Ganymede, and she's very proud of him, and also informs him that he could have applied for dual credit and finished all three of his quests at the same time, because he was basically meeting up with both Hebe and Iris. And then he finds out that he could only do it in advance, so he's out of luck at this point. And this just, it brings back so many memories for me of not knowing what the heck you're doing when you're applying for colleges and all of the rules. And they don't make like getting financial aid all that easy. Like, you really have to research which ones you can apply for and how you have to pay them back. And it's such a complicated process when I really feel like it doesn't have to be.
I agree. I also think that they're expecting a lot out of 18-year-olds who have not yet had a real dose of the real world. Like, high school is not the real world.
Especially since they don't teach you how to, like, balance checkbooks and, like, you know, do all of these other things.
If I had learned anything in high school about investing and what it means to take on, like, debt and blah, 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 I may have made other choices in my life. But I did not. And so therefore, I will be paying off student loans for another, like, probably 20 years.
Oh, God.
So it's like, you know, that sort of thing. But yeah, I felt that same, like, ugh, yes, you forgot to fill out the one thing, and so now you can't get that scholarship, or you can't do this. Like, that definitely happened to me at least once. But I also, like, I love that Percy talks about it, like, that was definitely not there. That phrase was not on the contract.
On the
they added that after I left the room the last time, after she flushed me last time. So I had no chance. Like, he is sold on, like, they added that. They're just doing it to piss me off. It's just the gods being the gods. Like, you know, I loved how just kind of, like, surly he is about it. Like, of course I could have gotten them all done at once. Of course I had to apply for it ahead of time. Of course that's how this is all going to go. And, it just,
I mean, I could imagine Zeus doing this to him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, 100%.
100%. Like, oh, you could have been done with them all at once if you would have only known. Oh, too bad. Now you have to do two more.
Yeah. Percy asks Eudora to tell him where the river Ellison is, but she's hesitant because the god of the river might not let her back into his yoga studio if he finds out that she sent a demigod to his waters. And we kind of find out a little bit more about the River Ellison. Monsters bathe in these waters, dirtying it up and basically angering the god. He is, you know, we'll see very soon, he's very mad about how dirty his river is.
Mm-hmm.
But she decides to send him to the headwaters anyway, saying like, well, I guess if I flush you and you just happen to end up there, that can't really be traced back to me. So she's not, like, a terrible guidance counselor, but she's not the best guidance counselor either.
She's a little selfish and is more interested in making sure that her life isn't made difficult.
Yeah.
But she still gets him close.
Yeah.
He has to poke around and find his way there, but at least he's in the right direction.
Yeah. And that right direction is Yonkers, of all places. And he's like, it's better than Greece and Brazil, I guess.
I mean, if he had ended up in either of those, it would have been way more complicated.
Yeah, anyway. I've got to call his mom and be like, well, can you send me a plane to get...
Or could he, like, call Rainbow? Like,
oh,
long-distance hippocampi travel?
Maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Child of Poseidon, how much can
I
you
mean,
get away with?
Maybe Poseidon can just suck him through the ocean at, like, warp speed.
Like, listen, my guidance counselor sent me to Greece. I can't afford to get back.
Yeah.
I'm going to need your help now.
We do find some very important information in this chapter, though, and it's that Percy can return that little blue chair he was sitting on for one gold drachma. So maybe that's how kids earn their coins.
We just asked this.
Yeah, just doing quests for gods and spirits and finding all of their lost items. I mean, that's basically what most of the quests for the gods are anyway, but
I was going to say, what other, like, random objects are gods throwing out into the world and then saying, if a demigod brings it back, I'll give a gold drachma. Like, how many other things? Like,
Yeah, it's gotta be something kind of, like, basic, but right. something they would use a lot. I don't know. That's a good question.
Just one of those things. Yeah. Like, if you know, if Zeus could make them return lightning bolts, he definitely would, but you can't really return those.
So. Yeah, that's true. But I thought that was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
About him being able to return it for one gold drachma, though I don't think he does.
No, I don't think
so. But he's
got
a bowl of drachmas.
Right.
So,
it's sitting next to his bed. It's all good.
Yeah. He does end up at the Sawmill River, which has been previously paved over and turned into an underground drainage canal. And apparently this is something that they've done in New York City with a lot of the rivers. And it's really sad if you think about it, like paving over the river and just turning it into a drainage canal.
Right.
I mean, that's so sad.
It is.
But some people do want to uncover them again and turn them back into natural habitats, which I think is a nice idea, but I am very curious about being able to maintain something like that.
It's true.
In New York City, of all places.
Yeah.
The river is so dirty and gross that it makes Percy gag. He, like, prays to the god of not vomiting, which I thought was really funny.
That was a good bit.
And it's full of things like snake scales and talons, so he knows he's close.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's very smart and decides that he doesn't want to go in alone. And also, he doesn't have the staff. So he decides to return later with backup.
It was very smart of him.
It was very smart of him. I mean, he really had no choice because he didn't have the staff.
Yeah.
But even the idea of, like, Rick writing this book where, like, he finds the river and then he has to go back and gather, like, you know, backup and his supplies and stuff like that. There's, like, a slowness to the story that makes it feel like that slice of life we keep talking about. Because if this was another book, like, he'd already have the staff with him and they would just head right into battle or whatever. But it really shows us, like, he's taking his time with this story.
Like, they've got 15 days before Zeus's next feast. So, like, they know what they need to do next. They're on the right path. And so, yeah, Percy can say, all right, let's come back tomorrow. I'm going to go home and sleep and go to school the next day. And tomorrow afternoon, we'll come back and we'll do this. Like, I do kind of love that it's fitting into their everyday lives as opposed to taking over their lives
yeah.
for however much time. And then they can get back to their normal day-to-day.
Yeah.
Like, they're able to kind of fit this quest in around mm-hmm. everything else.
And after so many books in the Percy Jackson universe, I think that this makes it feel different. Which
it
is
does.
Really nice. Because, I mean, I would read 100 books about Percy Jackson. But I do like that Rick keeps finding different ways to, like, give us a different type of story. Even with Trials of Apollo, like, giving it from Apollo's point of view and all of that. And Heroes of Olympus, where we really, like, expanded the story. And, you know, The Sun and the Star from Nico's point of view, every iteration, every addition to the series kind of adds something new. And that can't be easy after all this time in all these books.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's one of the things Rick has managed to do very well. Like, when you finish the first Percy Jackson series and you're stepping into Heroes of Olympus, if you don't already know, you're kind of questioning, like, how is he going to tell another grand five-book series that doesn't feel so similar to the first one? Because one of the things about the first series is it's, you know, three kids go on a quest, get into trouble, meet monsters, you know, big bad battle at the end, it's not quite over, start the next book. Like, it feels very, almost formulaic, but in a very comforting, like, this is how these books go kind of way. And so, yeah, when he stepped into Heroes of Olympus, it was like, oh, he expanded the number of demigods that are going. It's a bigger thing. You're going across the ocean. You're flying. You're, you know. So it did. It upped the stakes. So, like, at that point, how do you up the stakes anymore?
Yeah.
I love that he was able to kind of reinvent the Percy world in Trials of Apollo and let us see it from a god, not a god perspective, like a god who has been cursed to be mortal again.
Yeah.
Like, that was a totally fascinating way to tell more stories in this world. And then, yeah, with, like, Sun and the Star being a totally different character, it gives you a new set of eyes. And here, it's a very familiar perspective, but it's at a totally different point in their lives. And so this, I feel like, yeah, it has a whole different feel to it than either of the previous two Percy series. And I really, really enjoy that.
Yeah, same. So what was your favorite line during this chapter?
It was while he was sitting with his guidance counselor and they were looking at the contract or whatever the thing was. And Percy says, at the bottom of a tiny paragraph about dual credit, which I'm pretty sure hadn't been there before, an asterisk led me to an even tinier disclaimer that read, this applies to Percy Jackson. I love that it literally, like, he's like, wait, nobody else has ever had to do this. This is only for me. How are there things I don't know about?
Yeah, exactly.
And I just love that this applies to Percy Jackson. Fantastic.
I love it. You know, and good for Percy. Like, he grumbled about it, but then he's just like, all right, don't have another choice. Might as well get on with it.
This is just how things go when you're dealing with the gods. Yep.
Yeah. My favorite line was when he was like, I was fortunate that I ended up in Yonkers instead, which is the first time in history the words fortunate and Yonkers have been used in the same sentence. I don't know much about Yonkers, but I always remember people kept changing Lady Gaga's Wikipedia page to say that she was from Yonkers, and she would get so mad about it. That's the only thing that I know about Yonkers. I mean, nobody wants to be from there.
I've heard it used as a punchline a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, New Jersey in general gets used as a punchline a lot for New Yorkers. All, you know, it's a thing. But Yonkers, I feel like, gets that, like, it's a joke kind of thing. I don't know if it's just because it sounds goofy. Like,
maybe.
Yonkers.
Yonkers.
Like, you know, it just sounds ridiculous. But yeah, no, I... It's a good one.
Yeah. What was your favorite moment?
I just really love that there are whole sets of rules that they've put into place just for Percy. Like, this has not happened to anyone else. They're not foreseeing it happen to anyone else. They just want to make Percy's life difficult. And so they've put together an entire, like, list of rules that he doesn't even know about. And
yeah,
it just cracks me up.
Yeah. Mine is Eudora thinking she's being helpful when she's really not, because she's very enthusiastic. And, like, she's like a lot of other gods and spirits where they're, like, slightly removed from the mortal world. So, like, she thinks she's doing a good thing. Like, when Poseidon was like, oh, yeah, you can do all these quests. It'll be great. Like, you know, I put up a flyer for you and stuff. And, like, he thought he was being helpful. And Percy's like, oh, my God, this is the worst.
Like, you're being helpful in the worst way.
Yeah, possible. Exactly. Eudora's doing that a lot. So, yeah, it was pretty great.
And that takes us to chapter 16, entitled Grover Busts Out the Snake Songs. Percy, Annabeth, and Grover return to the Ellison and adventure into the dark tunnel, only to discover a whole natural environment in a vast cavern a little ways in. Grover takes on the role of distraction again, while Percy and Annabeth sneak poorly to a waterfall pool at the mouth of the River Ellison. Okay, so, yeah, Percy brings Annabeth and Grover back to Yonkers the next afternoon, and they start their quest into this tunnel, underground-looking thing that is quite murky and gross, but it's what they have to do. I love how each of them is prepared for this task. Percy has brought the staff, no mention of anything else, so I'm guessing he's just like, eh, whatever, I've got Annabeth, I'll be fine.
Yeah. To be fair, that is the most important thing they need to have.
It really is. The staff and Annabeth. Those are very important things. So Percy has the staff. Grover has a bag full of snacks and his panpipes, which is really on par for Grover, like, that fits. And Annabeth is the rational one who has a well-stocked backpack with basic adventuring supplies, including flashlights, rope, things like that. Things you may need.
Yeah. I mean, the snacks are also important, though.
They are.
I'd be the Grover of the...
I never would go adventuring without a snack. Whenever I, quote-unquote, ran away from home as a child, it was, I need my blankie, I need snacks, I need a flashlight, I need... you know, extra shoes, but there were always snacks in that bag.
Yeah.
It's necessary.
Although, whenever we travel together, you're always the one with, like, the first aid kit and stuff like that, so I do feel like you would be the Annabeth to my Grover.
I mean...
I'll pack the snacks.
I was the 12-year-old child, 11-year-old child, who went to Cedar Point with an entire bag of supplies. First aid supplies. Garbage bags for your shoes for the water rides. Ziploc bags for everybody to put their wallets in, because back then we didn't have cell phones. But anything you needed to keep dry. I had a way to keep it dry. I had extra coins for the lockers. I was prepared for anything. I had Advil. I had, like, Tums. I was, like, 11 or 12.
That
and I would
so
not
cute.
Go to Cedar Point without this bag of supplies. Like, it was my quest.
I love this.
Yeah. I definitely have a bit of Annabeth in me. That's for 100%. Okay, so they enter the tunnel. It's very slippery. It's really gross, but they're doing their best to stay out of the water as much as possible because they don't know what being in the water is going to trigger down the way. Right. Like, is Ellison going to know they're there? They have no idea. So they try and stay out of it as much as possible.
And given the other, like, mythological rivers associated with the underworld and Greek mythology, like, a lot of them will hurt you very badly.
Absolutely.
So they were smart to try to stay out of the water.
But at some point, it was just not feasible, and so they ended up kind of walking through the water, which was also gross. But they make it halfway, where they start seeing this luminescent moss and lichen growing on the sides of the tunnels. And Percy immediately draws a smiley face.
I love that.
And I love how Annabeth, like, razzes him for it. Like, wow, are we, like, five? Like,
yeah.
And he goes, well, I was eight just a day ago, and it makes Annabeth smile, and he is, like, all about making her smile, and it just makes me really happy. But they, it then says that they continue to do some light graffiti on the walls. So after she mocks him for the smiley face, they all take a turn drawing on the bioluminescent moss and whatever. I think it's hilarious, but what else? I mean, that's what you do.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be pretty cool. I'd want to do it too.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. The tunnel quickly becomes this massive cavern with cathedral-high ceilings and these massive stalactites. It has yellow grass growing on the sides of the river. There are trees that are kind of ashen, and they remind Percy of the fields of Asphodel, which took me right back to that part from the trailer with all the trees and the weird lady kind of coming toward camera. And I'm like, I wonder if that's not supposed to be the Fields of Asphodel. I know we've talked about that before.
Yeah.
But it took me right back to that because that's kind of that feeling I got. They then come up to a pool, basically, and they're hiding behind a rock to kind of get a look at what's coming forward. Grover takes the lead and decides to lead them through some high grass because Grover is the nature-centric one of the group and can probably be the quietest and, like, has the best navigational sense, which is very smart. And I loved in this moment that Percy notes Grover's growth as a leader. Like, he really takes a second to say, this is not the same Grover. Like, when we first started adventuring, Grover was the last person to do anything that was at all scary because he was a very timid, scared young satyr.
Yeah.
But he's really stepped into his own being on the Council of Cloven Elders and, like, really just is a true adventurer now and is not afraid to charge headlong into danger. He does it in a smart way, though, and I just love that for Grover. So they march quite a ways through through this grass, and they end up at this large boulder, and Grover helps Annabeth and Percy onto the boulder so they can see a greater idea of what's going on in the near vicinity. They see a whole bunch of, like, small pools and things on the river, and there are snakes in every one of them. Like, they are everywhere. And so they're trying to spot a good place in the river to take the staff where they can maybe sneak in, clean it, and get out without having to deal with all the snakes, because as we remember, they're not supposed to harm the snakes.
Right.
So they're trying to be sneaky about this and not get into confrontation and trouble. Annabeth spots a place near the mouth of the stream. It's like a waterfall pool kind of thing. And they're guessing that the snakes have trouble swimming upstream into that because the current's too strong.
Right.
So they're saying, okay, if we can get to there, that's probably our best shot. And at that moment, Annabeth wishes that they had Luke's flying shoes.
Yeah.
This is the first of a couple of references back to Lightning Thief and previous books that happen in this chapter, and I think a little bit into the next chapter. And it's just so odd for her to be the one to wish back to the flying shoes.
Yeah. I mean, Grover's not happy about her wishing back to the flying shoes, but
too soon?
Yeah. But I mean, I get it, because Luke was such a big part of her life for so long, and even if she doesn't talk about him much, I'm sure that she thinks about him sometimes. And the flying shoes, from a tactical perspective, would be very helpful at this point.
They would.
Yeah. And we also know that Rick was writing this while working on the first season, so it makes so much sense that, like, this is in the back of his mind as well.
I think that's my favorite part of the whole thing, is I'm knowing that this is coming, this whole book exists because they were working on the show, and I'm like, I think Rick was like, I want to throw in a lot of this little stuff.
Yeah.
The stuff that, you know, big fans of the first series are going to love hearing about. Mm-hmm. And that was absolutely, like, one of those, like, ooh, Annabeth said that. Weird. And then Grover reacts, and you're just like, yeah.
And even Percy has a reaction to, like, he doesn't really like hearing Luke's name, but, like, he also knows that it can't be easy for her to, like, talk about him like that and stuff. And it's just a really interesting moment where you're reminded how much history these three have with each other and everything that they've been through.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so then Percy and Annabeth and Grover make the decision that Percy and Annabeth are going to try to sneak to this good spot, the mouth of the waterfall, and they're going to go through the tall grass on their own because Grover's going to stay behind and kind of keep a lookout, and if they get spotted by the snakes, if there starts to be trouble, Grover is going to play a panpipe tune because apparently he knows some great snake songs. I want to know if one of them is like a Taylor Swift Reputation song because there are so many that would be like fantastic for this. He does not play one of those, I'll tell you right now. But yeah, so he's going to basically be a distraction. If things start to go south, he'll play a tune and try and buy them some time. So Percy and Annabeth make their way to the waterfall, and it's a long, slow journey, but they make it there. And the grass by this point is way taller than them, which, you know, I've seen enough scary movies in tall grass that I don't
Jurassic Park.
I don't like it when the grass gets that tall.
Yeah.
Like, no, thank you.
A lot of bad things can happen.
Velociraptors, you never know.
Yeah.
So Percy is kind of preparing. They're on the lip of this waterfall pool, and it's up a ways from the actual surface of the water. And Percy is preparing to kind of jump into the pool, thinking, how am I going to get out? But they need to clean the staff first, and then they'll figure out the rest, basically. And Annabeth shows him, I've got rope, I can get you out. So he's like, okay, here we go. And at that moment, they start hearing panpipes in the background, and Annabeth says, well, time to get moving, and just, like, shoves Percy into the water, and that's the end of the chapter. And it is the perfect way to end the chapter.
It really is.
It's so delightful. It's so deliciously Annabeth, like, all right, well, we gotta get moving.
Yeah.
It's time to go. So fun. So fun. Okay, so, what was your favorite line?
My favorite line was either, how old are you? 8 just last week, because that was
such a good one.
It was hilarious. Or, look at my old friend taking charge and kicking grass.
It's classic.
It's a great person joke.
It's classic, yeah. Mine was, if we'd held up flashing signs that read, free snake food, we might have drawn more attention to ourselves, but not much. Just, yeah, just so them. Like, oh, we snuck through the grass, we weren't sneaking anywhere. And then what was your favorite moment?
Mine was Grover taking the lead, volunteering to go through the tall grass first to give them a good path to walk. I have said this previously, but Grover's growth throughout the books, and especially the person that we see him in this book in particular, is so different from what we've seen in The Lightning Thief, for example. And it's just really great to have this reminder that he is completely different. He's a lot more willing to take charge and do all of that kind of stuff. And I just love seeing that side of him.
At one point while doing the notes for this chapter, I typed reed pipes, and then I looked back and I was like, no, they're his pan pipes, because he really has upgraded from the old reed pipe set he used to carry around and fiddle with to, like, this pan pipe set.
Are they, like, the double-layered ones, pan pipes?
I assumed these either were, like, more like what Pan carried, or have either have more or a different tune or are made of a different material or something. But I had to mentally kind of make the assumption that reed pipes are kind of rudimentary to these pan pipes that he's now carrying around.
Yeah, I don't know if there's a difference between them. Because reed pipe, like, might just be made out of reeds versus, like,
that was more or less what I thought. But I just thought these might be a little higher quality.
Yeah, I do like the idea that it's, like, an upgraded version.
Yeah. My favorite moment was Percy getting excited about making Annabeth smile when she's trying not to.
Yeah.
It's just one of those, like, I love this about them, that he really, like, he gets a thrill out of getting a smile out of her.
Yeah.
Those silly little things make me very, very happy.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, that brings us to our final chapter for the week, chapter 17, I Meet the Man-Bun of Doom. I'm so glad that I landed this chapter because it's definitely one of my favorites. Percy comes face to face with Ellison, the river god, and it does not go well.
That's saying something.
So, to start right off, somehow Percy loves the fact that Annabeth pushed him off the cliff and into the water below. And I just love that about him.
Yeah.
He's not even that mad about it.
Yeah. He's not. And it's just the little speech he gives may come back in a few minutes when we talk about favorite lines, because it's so poignant and beautiful and very them, because yeah. Not everyone could say that about someone shoving you off a cliff into the water, into danger, but these two, it absolutely works, yeah. And I love it.
And just being like, bon voyage!
Right? Here you go. Time to get moving. Yep.
So, everything seems to be working pretty well. He falls into the water, the staff is getting clean, until the man-bun of doom shows up. Ellison is sapphire blue, which makes him almost invisible in the water. And if you've seen the Reed Riordan article about him, you'll get a really good visual of what he looks like. He is not an unattractive man, especially if you like man-buns, and yeah. I do. He wears a tank top and loose pants and has a glorious man bun.
I mean, basically, we already know he teaches yoga. I'm thinking, like, the ultimate, like, yoga guy.
Yeah.
Where they wear, like, the loose flowy linen pants and the, yeah.
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 He looks like an angry yoga instructor because Percy very specifically says, you know that calm, like, meditative yoga instructor? Yeah, that's not Ellison. And also, he is very sarcastic for a god. That really threw me for a loop because gods don't understand sarcasm as much as mortals do. And yet, Ellison is wielding sarcasm like a weapon, and it's really great to witness.
I feel like all of his time kind of under the cement in this river that people couldn't get to has given him time to just absorb all of what humanity is saying. Like,
yeah.
I feel like he just has a greater understanding of language and sarcasm than everyone else, especially in New York City. I feel like that's just explains why he is the yeah. way he is. And
maybe
yes,
Yonkers makes you more sarcastic.
Which is totally possible. But I really do love that he's just insanely sarcastic.
Yes.
It's so much fun.
It is a lot of fun, especially because Percy doesn't actually get it, because he's not used to gods being sarcastic.
Not at all. Yeah.
Yeah, it flips everything on its head, and it's really funny. So Ellison sends Percy out of the water before the staff is fully clean, saying that Percy broke all the rules. No demigods, no shoes, and no using his headwaters to bathe. And Percy was like, I didn't know. And it kind of calls back to, like, the brochure and the
yeah.
notes there. He's like, man, I hate when the rules were there the whole time and I just didn't see them. So he tries to placate Ellison by telling him how much Iris loves him and his yoga classes. And it almost works. Ellison's pretty happy about everything that Percy is saying until Percy asks how he can make it up to him. And basically, Ellison kind of does this, like, proposal where he says, you know, oh, you have to leave the river cleaner than when you found it, but he's very doubtful that mm-hmm. Percy is going to actually, like, clean the staff and then not go back on his word.
The sarcasm is literally dripping
yes.
from his mouth. Like, oh, you're going to clean my river when you're done. Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Like, I believe you. Yeah.
Yeah, so you really got to wonder what demigod hurt Ellison, because
yeah.
he does not trust them at all.
Yeah, clearly somebody has, yeah, done something to make Ellison really distrust demigods.
Yeah.
Which one was it?
And then Percy does the worst thing he could possibly do and accidentally calls him a small river compared to the Hudson and East Rivers. And Ellison is not happy with this. He immediately kind of gets defensive and he's like, oh, you're calling me small? You're calling me insignificant? I know how you can make it up to me. I've always wondered how long it would take a son of Poseidon to drown. What? That is so dark, like, and scary.
It is very dark and scary. And, like, Percy wasn't trying to insult him.
No.
And he was trying to just say, like, I've tackled bigger projects. I can handle yours.
Yeah.
Like, this is going to be fine. Like, he's just trying to get across. Like, I see the size of the scope of this, and I can fix it. But that is not how Ellison takes it. So,
no.
Yeah, someone wronged him
yeah,
quite badly.
Exactly. And I have to take this moment to mention, that I have, for quite a while now, like maybe a couple of years, have been having reoccurring dreams of being able to breathe underwater. Like, in all of my dreams where I'm underwater, I slowly, like, take breaths, and I'm just like, yeah, I can totally breathe underwater. So, am I a daughter of Poseidon?
I mean, you could be.
Right? I mean, it is only in my dreams. I don't think I would try that in real life. But,
yeah.
I do find it kind of, good advice. But I do find it kind of weird. And I mean, it's really fun, though, when you're like worried about drowning, when you're like, wait, I can breathe. Everything is fine.
I was going to say, I can't say I've ever had a dream where I could breathe underwater.
Really? It's very useful.
A lot of dreams where my pants are just suddenly not there. So I don't know what that means, but you know. So mine are never cool. Like, I can breathe underwater. I really wish that was a thing.
My mom can fly in her dreams a lot. Maybe she is the daughter of Zeus.
I've never really flown in my dreams either. Like, I have some wacky, weirdo things that happen in dreams, but it's usually, like, within the metaphysics of the world.
Yeah.
Like, the only thing that happens to me is I, like, travel fast. Like, oh, I was here and then I'm there. But, like, I don't think I've ever flown.
Okay, so daughter of Hermes.
Maybe.
Yeah. Now we have to do, like,
dream. I used to have a reoccurring dream, I've told you about this, where I got chased by a T-Rex in the back of a car, very much like Jurassic Park. It happened every Christmas for, like, 5 or 6 years as a child. Yep. I had the same dream every Christmas Eve. I woke up Christmas morning having had this nightmare where I was in a car, very much like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, and was being chased by a dinosaur that escaped the circus. It was like a giant circus full of dinosaurs in cages.
Okay.
And someone opens the T-Rex cage, and this thing is chasing me, and I'm trying to escape, and then I end up in the car. And I usually woke up at some point while it was chasing me in the car.
Wow.
But, like, I would walk around the whole circus every time and see all the different ones and be, like, fascinated, and yeah. And then it always ended up with me being chased.
I'm more interested in the fact that it happened every Christmas Eve for, like, 5 years.
And only at Christmas Eve. Like,
it's so funny.
It was so weird. I haven't had it in a long time, but it's one of those things that sticks with me, because I remember, like, 5 or 6 Christmases in a row, I had the same dream.
Yeah. Now I want to do, like, dream interpretations where it tells us what our godly parent is. So if you want to write in about your weird dreams, we could try to analyze them for you.
I was going to say, like, there's got to be, we could definitely do an episode on the god of dreams. It's Morpheus, isn't it? And we could, like, do some dream interpretation.
That could be fun. We'll add it to the list of possible future episodes.
Yeah.
Okay, so favorite lines. You definitely have a very good one from this chapter.
Yes. It is Percy's long little soliloquy at the beginning, where he's talking about Annabeth shoving him into the pool. And he says, "Find someone who loves you the way my girlfriend pushes me off a cliff. Without hesitation, with full confidence in your abilities, with the rock-steady belief that your relationship can handle it, and with complete faith that when you come out of the water, assuming you survive, you will totally forgive them for the push." It's a beautiful moment for them, and it's true. She only pushes him because she knows, A, he'll be fine, and B, they gotta get moving, and he's gonna forgive her. And yeah, if you've got that kind of trust, you're good to go.
Yeah, that's true. I love it. My favorite line was when he's like, "Just my luck. I brought sincerity to a sarcasm fight."
I had already written mine down, like the long one, but this one, it's such a good line. And it's so Percy. Like, this just screams, like, I want stickers with that quote on it. Like, this is as good as some of those other classic Percy quotes for me.
Yeah, for so sure. Good. What was your favorite moment?
Mine was Elson being offended by Percy's Poseidon-related self. It didn't matter what Percy said. It was, "I'm a child of Poseidon. I have abilities in the water. I can help. I can help clean up my mistake. I can be..." And everything that came out of his mouth, Elson had a sarcastic response to, was not impressed by, was over it, wanted this kid out of his pool, and then by the end is like, "You know what? No, you can stay in my pool, and I'm going to try and drown."
Yeah. Like, and stay in there forever.
Right, exactly. I really loved seeing Ellison and Percy kind of square off. A god of the river and Percy, this child of Poseidon. Like, I am fascinated to see in the next chapter who comes out on top.
Yeah.
Because we know Percy's a powerful demigod, but Ellison's a god. Like, how does that translate?
Yeah.
How does this work in, you know, when they're actually working against each other?
Yeah. I feel like I'm doing a good job picking when to end these sections, because I know you're probably like, oh, I want to keep reading.
I mean, definitely.
I'm only torturing Kristen a little bit.
It's okay. I like, it's fine.
Yeah.
This is fun for me. I love a good cliffhanger. I love tension.
Yeah.
I love leaving it with something to expect. I love the anticipation.
You do. I forgot that about you.
I eat it up.
My favorite moment is actually right in line with yours. It's Allison being so sarcastic. We rarely see this in Gods. And Percy falling for it, which I feel like is even rarer.
Yeah.
And Percy seriously got out-sarcasmed by Allison.
He did. He really did. It's remarkable. That doesn't happen. Percy's usually the one biting things back
and
being punched by Annabeth so he doesn't say the thing that's on the tip of his tongue.
Yeah.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. Follow our website on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr, and Instagram at Subjectify Media, or visit us at SubjectifyMedia.com. We are home to three other podcasts as well. Tune into Rewatchable for in-depth discussions of your favorite canceled and cult classic TV shows, such as Firefly, Veronica Mars, Avatar The Last Airbender, Buffy, Angel, and more. Not About the Weather is a general interest show that sometimes features interviews with our favorite creators. And Not Another Teen Wolf podcast features interviews with the cast and creators and has discussed every episode of the show, as well as the movie, and Jeff Davis's new show, Wolfpack. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Twitter at Prophecy Podcast or on Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at Prophecy Radio Podcast. You can also email us your long-form thoughts to prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and we really, really appreciate it. You can leave us questions, comments, ideas for episodes, or things you want to hear from us in any of these places. We do have an email this week from Shannon, and I'm going to throw it to Karen for that.
Yeah. Thank you, Shannon, for writing in again. She says, my impression of Sally Jackson has always been that she's a relatively young mom. I always imagined she was 20 when she had Percy, for easy math. That way, she would be in her late 30s when she has another baby while Percy is 17.
That sounds not too great.
Yeah, that makes sense. Also, part of me wants, like, the romance novel of, like, Sally and Poseidon meeting and, like, you know, him sweeping her off her feet and all that. If only just to see her when she's, like, 20 getting, you know, caught up with a god.
You can change the names to protect the innocent and write that yourself.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I mean, you can't call her Sally Jackson, mother of Percy, future mother of Percy, but you could totally write that book. And I would 100% read that book.
So it'd be Susie Johnson, mother of Perry Johnson.
There you go. Yeah, some version of that. I mean, there have been so many fanfiction-y kinds of books written in the world, and so many vampire romance where you find out that the love interest is a vampire. I don't know if I've ever read one where the love interest turns out to be a Greek god.
Yeah.
A lot of demigods, if you're talking Greek mythology romance stuff, I've read them where they end up being Greek gods, or demigods, or if they end up being, like, there's a whole series I'm thinking of that has, like, titans and different versions of the titans and, like, humanoid titans and things like that. But, yeah, like, I don't know if I've ever read one where you actually get the story of the human falling in love with the god and it not being, like, a
creepy
wearer tale. Like they're not trying to warn you away from, you know, ever falling for a god. How would you know? How could you stop it? But, like, that could be a fun book to write.
It could be.
I'm just saying. And I would 100% read it, and I'll bet you there's a lot of ladies our age who love Percy who would love to read how Sally fell in love with Poseidon.
Yes. Yeah. So Shannon keeps saying, I am 40 and my oldest child is 12. One of the perks of this is that my 12-year-old daughter has now started reading the Percy Jackson books. She actually stayed up last night reading Titan's Curse and then started the next one immediately. I'm excited to watch the new Disney Plus series with her when it comes out. That's so cute.
That is really cute.
She says, thanks for looking up middle age and confirming that I'm not there yet. P.S. Chapter 15 of Chalice of the Gods. I guess one way to get drachmas is to turn in blue plastic chairs. Yep, we did talk about that. And she also says amazing quote from chapter 17, and it was the one where she says, find someone who loves you the way my girlfriend pushes me off a cliff. It's really great. I love that.
Yeah.
So thank you so much, Shannon, for writing in. I love that so much. And yeah, I would really be... I wonder if there is fanfic out there. It probably is of Sally and Poseidon.
I would imagine someone's done something. Yeah. But yeah.
That'd be pretty interesting.
I would definitely read that. In case anyone who writes fanfic is out there somewhere looking for an idea, I would definitely read Sally and Poseidon. Like, I would love to see how that all went down.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily like... especially if you're writing it as Sally and Poseidon, it's not necessarily a happily ever after, because it doesn't end happily ever after for them. Yeah. But it is a fascinating idea. I would definitely give it a shot. Okay, so next week we will be talking about Chalice of the Gods chapters 18 through 20 as we get closer and closer to December 20th and the first episode, guys. This time of year goes so fast. I want it to slow down because I love Christmas and I love December. I hate winter, but I love, like, the idea of the Christmas spirit, and it just makes me so happy. And I want it to slow down, but at the same time this year I'm just like, can we just get to the 20th? Like, I want this show so bad.
That's so funny because I don't like Christmas and, like, all of that kind of stuff. Kristen already knows this. I'm a Halloween girl.
It's my holiday.
Yeah. And I kind of, like, I want it to slow down. I don't know if I'm ready for the show yet. Because once it starts, it's only going to be a few weeks till it's over. And we have to wait again. And, like, I know we're going to have so much fun going through it and, like, going back through it again and again. But, like, I don't know if I'm ready yet. I'm scared. I'm excited. But I'm also scared. So.
Well, the good news is you still have a couple of weeks here to get ready and to feel prepared. Yeah. You have time. And we have a Dreamlight Valley update before then
to
take your mind off of it and distract you. So for all those Dreamlight Valley fans out there, we will definitely be playing.
Yes.
Okay, but until next time, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.